Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It is Monday, October 6th, and I'm happy to be here with you on Speak Up today. And we have some interesting segments to play for you today. And a little later, we have, we're going to start off with a news a report from our friends in Smithers about First Nations responses to possible new oil and gas development, and particularly around the health impacts of oil and gas development. I think it's a relevant story these days with the federal government seeking to fast-track various sort of large industrial projects, and Alberta currently calling again for a pipeline through northern British Columbia to take Alberta oil to Tidewater. And they're also being talk of perhaps in some way relaxing or creating an exception to some of the tanker bans that exist on our coast to protect our vulnerable coastline from the ravages of potential oil spills. We also have a regular gardening segment with Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability, Gardening with Embark. Peter R.H. will be here in just a little while with his segment. Bird Note and a whole bunch more, even some great music, will be featured for you today. We're going to start off with our first story, though. This is from our friends at CICK, C-I-C-K in Smithers, and produced through the Local Journalism Initiative, which CJSF is also a partner of. And it's a... Let me set it up for you properly. First Nations in Northern BC held two press conferences simultaneously with members of the Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment this week to bring attention to the growing health issues in the province where oil and gas development is ramping up. And that is throughout, much of our province. And there are, as I said, a lot of new pressures to continue pushing oil and gas projects, even as perhaps we need to be shifting to other sources of energy and renewables. Anyway, here's our report from Dan Messick, CICK in Smithers.
You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News... Earlier this week, Wet'suwet'en Hereditary Chief Nae Mox joined a growing group of Cape physicians and other Indigenous leaders in Vancouver to call on the provincial government to do more to protect communities from the health impacts of gas development and flaring. Here's my conversation with Chief Nae Mox, fresh from Vancouver. Stay with us.
I am Hereditary Chief Nae Mox of the Wet'suwet'en Nation, and I am from the Tsayu, the Beaver Clan of the Wet'suwet'en, and I'm calling from my home here in Tekia, Igalgan.
Great, Chief Namok. Thanks so much for being with us here on CSK News again. Of course, as I mentioned, you were just in Vancouver. With a number of physicians from CAPE, as well as nurses and other hereditary leadership, Indigenous leaders from the Northwest here. What were you guys doing in Vancouver, and why were you there?
Well, we wanted to bring to the forefront the health risk for all along when it comes to oil and gas industries, and then the effects on communities and the amount of money that's putting in to support this industry, and they're not putting enough into the medical care itself. Like, how many emergency rooms have we had in shutdowns? And then we also learned that, like, a lot of the physicians that are in these areas that are affected by oil and gas pipelines, et cetera, flaring, they are moving out of those communities for their own health. So that's another issue that's never been addressed. All they want to do is say these projects are in the best interest of Canada. But what about the best interest of the Canadians themselves?
Yeah. Namok, tell me who you joined with, and whereabouts in Vancouver. What was the message that you were trying to send, and to whom?
We were joined by, Dr. Melissa Lamb, who actually worked in Wrench Memorial Hospital here for a number of years and throughout the Northwest. She is the Executive Director of the Canadian Association for Physicians for the Environment, as well as members of CANE, which is Canadian Association of Nurses for the Environment. We had engineers that have formerly worked in that industry to talk about what they had discovered and health risks to the workers. It was quite a vast and varied group, as well as, you know, Tara Marzen from the Gitignol on their reports to, you know, the environment. We had our youth from the Lackey Firekeepers, Grace Vickers and Drew Harris. And there was elected chief, executive chief, and other people there, like Kaina Gatta from Dogwood, and then Jesse Stopper and myself. So it was varied, and it was, you know, to have the presser and then the panels on such a varied angle and viewpoints of what is happening and why these here projects are being forced upon us without any consultation or public input. And, you know, if you actually even think about this here major projects office they have, they handpicked who's on that. They're not worried about what the public thinks. They just want people that agree with them, and it will sign off.
You know, obviously our listeners know that there is a natural gas pipeline, the CGL pipeline, running through the territory. It is feeding gas to the LNG Canada facility, and obviously shipping that LNG to Asia now, after quite a number of tankers have come and gone. You know, this is happening in Kitimat, and there's flaring, and I've been hearing stories of people, you know, having some respiratory issues since the intense flaring has begun. But what are you hearing from your communities? You know, clearly there aren't any flaring stacks or any sort of emissions coming from this in particular in your community. But what are you hearing from some of the folks, your membership, and folks within your clan about some of the concerns that they have around some of what you just talked about?
Well, first and foremost, what they're doing to the environment, which affects everybody's health, you know, contamination of the water, the destruction of the environment itself, and knowing there are no long-term plans. These things are simply for money. So they basically put a bounty on every human's head for what profit that is not going to last. There is no profit there is no market for it. They keep on saying, oh, we sent these ships out, but there is no market. I haven't seen if you look at LNG ships themselves, they have the big bubble tanks on top. No, these are flat deckers. This is just publicity saying, oh, we shipped out LNG, a very minimal amount, because they haven't got what they need.
You mentioned the special projects wing that is being developed in Ottawa, that's going to take a look at these national interest projects, as you mentioned. One of them that was at the top of the list was the expansion of LNG Canada's facility into phase two to see more LNG shipped out from Kitimat. It looks like that may go ahead. At least from the government's perspective, they're going to try to push that forward. You know, what would you say to that once we actually start seeing more of these tankers coming through Kitimat?
Well, again, they're not looking at the health risk to the people that actually live there. You know, to them, we're just a little tick on a checkbox. That's all we are. They're not looking at the humans, the people that live here, the people that want to live here forever. And actually, when they talk about expansion, they haven't got the investment in there. Like right now, it's just a publicity stunt. If they say at one time they're going to, in excess of 270 ships or whatever coming out of Kitimat, and what have they had so far? Have they even had 1/10 of that? 1/100 of that? No, they haven't, because they'll keep on saying this is a done deal and Canada supports it. We'll put millions of dollars into it, and we won't put money into things that will be forward-thinking. It's just a stunt, and people need to realize they got to use their voices. They got to look at the facts, got to look at the figures, and stand together and say, no, we live here, we want to look after where we love, and we want a future.
One thing that supporters of, obviously, oil and gas production credit is the fact that there's good jobs that come out of this, good jobs in places that often don't have a lot of options, you know, Kitimat Village being one of them. You know, from folks I've spoken to there, there are a number of people who have jobs within the industry. Obviously, there's money flowing into the community, you know, seeing new infrastructure and whatnot. You know, what would you say to that, that there is, you know, this other side of the equation where, you know, we are seeing local people getting jobs out of this, Indigenous people getting jobs out of this. How do you kind of square that, knowing that there are a lot of health risks that come with this type of development?
Well, again, it goes back to putting a price tag on the heads of the local people that live there. Sure, there are some local people working, but most are flown in. Look at all the man camps we have. Those are not local people. When they say there's local jobs, it's actually short term if you actually think about the length of time. How construction to the length of time to being operating, it is not going to be local people. So if they got jobs, good for them, but guess what? It's not going to be there forever. In the construction, like a Coastal GasLink in our area, 2 years and that was it. Then our people were the first ones laid off. You know, they're put into jobs such as housekeeping or kitchen helpers and stuff. And that was it. It was not long-term at all.
Just the last thing for you, Namox. You know, this is, you know, quite the presser on Monday in Smithers and in Vancouver. Clearly, there's been a lot of this chatter over the last number of months. There were two physicians from CAPE that even issued a published a op-ed the other month, you know, about some of these concerns and that the government needs to take notice. What would you like to see coming out of this going forward, noting that, you know, there are a number of these projects that are slated to continue and the government in Ottawa and in Victoria seem quite supportive of it. So, you know, where do you see this going? What would you like to see happen?
Well, I'd like to see them take these health risks seriously. They really do not cover it at all. They never discuss it. And often, and it always goes back, the shortages that we have of healthcare workers, and it's going to get worse and worse. Now think about, you just talked about construction workers coming in. What about the pressures on our people who live here when they need medical help and have to stand in line? Because guess what? The priority is going to be people that they brought in to work on these projects. Why can't they take the millions upon millions of dollars and invest it into our future healthcare? You know, we are going to have pregnant ladies affected. We are going to have birth defects. That's proven. That money needs to be in protecting the future, not killing us.
All right, Namox, we'll leave it there for now. But thank you so much for your insight again. And we'll stay in touch on this subject as it progresses.
Thank you so very much.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by...
Thanks to Dan Messick at CICK in Smithers for that report. I apologize for some of the poor audio quality. Hopefully you stuck with us through that. I know a couple of bits were a little hard to make out. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, coming to you from the top of Burnaby Mountain here at Simon Fraser University. We're here throughout the year. coming to you on 90.1 FM with such a great variety of programming. And we're glad you're here tuning in and listening to us. I'm going to go with a song next. This is a band from here in Vancouver called Ecstasy, and this is 17. That was Ecstasy and 17 from their album Forever. They're a band right from right here in Vancouver. All right. The federal government, for many years, often in a very start and stop fashion, affected by various political winds and changing governments and coming and going, has been in a lot of different ways. Trying to enact gun control legislation, particularly around restricting certain types of firearms. It's always a controversial topic. Many on the left very much support it. Many on the right support the gun control and buyback programs on the rest of it. Many on the right are very much opposed. There's always the influence of the gun culture and attitudes around guns coming up from the United States, That always stuff sort of overflows the border. And, of course, many people are worried about guns themselves coming up from the U.S. The government is putting into place a gun buyback program to take out of circulation a lot of assault-style guns. That's what, as they're described in the legislation. And they've started a pilot program of this program, a sort of first go-around. And they're doing that in Cape Breton in Nova Scotia. This is our report from our colleagues at CKOA News in Glace Bay, Nova Scotia, in Cape Breton. Protesters came out for the very first, came out to protest as the pilot program got underway.
A group of protesters in front of police headquarters in Sydney last week is hoping they are sending a strong message to Ottawa. The rally on Grand Lake Road garnered national headlines because Ottawa chose the CBRM to test a buyback program for a list of guns that were restricted 5 years ago. Speakers at the rally and those attending say criminals won't be the ones turning in their guns, so the program is a waste of time and money. Mel Howley is a gun enthusiast from the Bradore area.
You have to draw the line, and the thing is, it's maybe what they're calling, I'll just use the term, prohibited firearms today or restricted or whatever, but down the road, it will probably be just shotguns. They're making a lot of us nervous or scared about what the future holds for, again, law-abiding, tax-paying Canadian citizens. They never tell us, for example, the crimes that are committed by law-abiding, hard-working Canadian citizens like yourselves who go through the trouble of, you know, following the rules and regulations to a T, and they're equating us with individuals who live a very maybe seedy lifestyle. Look around. We're all just regular folks that happen to own firearms, and instead of working with us, we always seem to be at loggerheads with the federal government. So we're not, firearm owners are not the problem. It's as simple as that. We do everything we are supposed to do. And I think it's just heavy-handedness on behalf of the federal Liberal government. Everybody here would help any police officer in any way he could.
Jeff McNeil of the Port Morian Wildlife Association says their guns are used to feed their families.
We're out there filling our freezers, sport shooting, enjoying our tools of the trade for this, right? Don't target the law-abiding firearms owners at this point. We're not the ones there. Work on crime. Right now, we're vetted. We've had to go through training. We had to do all this training aspects, plus we're vetted through the Cape Breton Regional Police Services and services across Canada for law enforcement, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, to make sure that we're in compliance.
Mike Kelly later used a bullhorn to speak to the more than 100 people who showed up.
To look at things they read, look at it from a bunch of different perspectives, and it gives them insight. And when I look at this legislation, I don't see one thing in this legislation that's going to prevent me, as a teacher in a school, from having someone come into the school and doing something wrong. Like, I'm standing here and I'm looking at a bunch of law-abiding citizens. Nobody in this crowd is hollering, nobody's yippee, and nobody's doing anything wrong. There's a bunch of concerned citizens here that feel like the government is taking private property and not reimbursing them, and that's exactly what is happening. This is fundamentally wrong. This is Canada.
Police Chief Robert Wall said at a recent federal news conference that the program provides lawful gun owners with an opportunity to stay in compliance with the law.
We see this as giving them an opportunity to surrender what they are no longer allowed to possess, to prevent criminal liability, and to demonstrate that this can be an effective process for removing dangerous firearms from our community without having to use extra police resources to go and seize them. Ultimately, this is about public safety and security of our communities and putting the protections in place to prevent further victimization and tragedy from gun violence. Thank you.
Walsh also said they'll be communicating with gun owners and government to provide feedback to ensure the operation runs smoothly before opening nationwide. He also said last week, since the program opened in the municipality, some gun owners have participated in the buyback initiative. For the Local Journalism Initiative, Bill McCush, Coast Radio News.
And thanks to CKOA for that report. I think we can expect, as that program rolls out across the country, there's going to be more protests of a similar vein. And probably we will see our federal politicians weigh in more on that issue too, particularly the Conservative Party, which has many times stated their opposition to this Liberal Party policy, Liberal government policy, to buy back these types of guns that have now been restricted in Canada. All right, let's move on to the weather for this week. Looks like a bit of a mixed bag across this week, with sun today, transitioning tomorrow to a bit of sun and cloud, with some rain coming up on Wednesday. A bit of shift back to sun on Thursday and Friday, and then come Friday night, the clouds roll in, and we have rain through most of the weekend. But you know what? It's October. It's not a bad week as far as October weeks go. Take advantage of the sun when you can get out, and bring your umbrella in case it rains. All right, here is a bird note.
His bird note. 19 owls. That's how many species call the U.S. and Canada home. And while some, like this great horned owl, do go hoot in the night, the natural diversity of our 19 defy stereotypes. North America's owls range in size from the 4-pound snowy owl, which stands more than 2 feet tall, to the diminutive elf owl of the southwestern deserts, who weighs less than 2 ounces. The spotted owl inhabits deep, dark, old-growth forests, while the flammulated owl prefers open pine woods. And the short-eared owl floats over wide-open grasslands. All owls are carnivores, but their diets range from mammals the size of jackrabbits to insects like moths and crickets. Boreal owls hunt in total darkness, using only their hearing. Northern hawk owls hunt by sight in broad daylight. A few migrate with the seasons. Others remain on their territories year-round. 19 owls, 19 distinctive natural histories. You can learn more about all of them at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Victoria band Frog Eyes has a new album out called The Open Up. This is a track from that album. This is I Walk Out There, the ambulance song.
When the ambulance came, who's taking up chairs? The city ran up on my floor. I'm out of there. When the ambulance left, my seat's soaking wet. I cradled my busted up, broken guitar in